Hello, and a very warm welcome to the third in our series of podcasts showcasing the people who are going to stand for Reform UK in West Lancashire. And the third person I've got to introduce is Ellis Newton.
Yeah.
Welcome, Ellis.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, your previous colleague did give the game away when he said on his podcast, your age.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I was not going to be patronising and ask your age, but as I already know it's 23, is that right?
So 24 recently.
You're getting older by the minute.
Yes, yeah, I can certainly feel it, growing the beard. I'm trying to make sure I don't get ID'd in places anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously, usually people are quite surprised. It's not even about Reform UK, it's just about politics in general. As soon as I say I'm involved in that, especially local politics, you know, there's not as many flashing lights. It's not, you know, you've not got the big books, have you? And all the BBC coming out and trying to interview you. But it's something I've always been passionate about.
Tell me about your politics. You haven't obviously always been passionate about Reform because we've not been going for that long.
Well, if I'm being completely honest, I live in West Lancashire. I have done now for about 5 years. I was studying at the university. But I come from Salford, so incredibly working class area in Manchester. Half of my family have basically been diehard Labour throughout their entire life. Then I've got my other half of the family who are all Conservatives. So I've always had a very weird mix of politics. I'd always say socially I'm Conservative. I always have been. I guess that's my dad's side rubbing off of me. And economically, I'm a bit more liberal. I'm a bit more maybe left-leaning. I do agree with social support. One of the big policies I like is anything that Reform does regarding families, the whole incentive of getting rid of the two-child cap for benefits, trying to encourage in people having it top-heavy for the start of benefits for children. Because it's always confused me. And when I was actually a member of the Conservatives for around a year. When it was Boris Johnson, I was quite passionate. And what's always confused me is that the right wing have always claimed to be super pro-family, while also being very, very anti-benefit towards families. And that's always confused me. If you are a right-wing individual, to me, you should be passionate about allowing and promoting a family, whether that be your traditional nuclear, which we all obviously strive for, or new modern families. There should be that social support to allow for, preferably, you know, fingers crossed, maybe we'll one day get to the point where we can have single income families.
Well, I'm certainly not in favour of the state dabbling in trying social engineering. Mm-hmm. However, at the moment, we have such a demographic problem with a birth rate of something like 1.7, which is predicted to go down in about 10 years down to about 1.3. So we have got a real demographic problem in that we're not going to be producing enough people younger than you to be able to come through and pay for all the liabilities that we've got.
Yeah, and from my own experience and from speaking, so obviously most of my friends tend to be my age, they're all, you know, university graduates like myself. I don't think it's for not wanting children. Most people deep down, and I talk to them and we've had plenty of conversations, most people want children. Most people strive for a family, whether that be for a legacy or from a mothering person. But we can't. We're living now in a country where, you know, I can't make that commitment financially. None of my friends can make that commitment because we don't live in a world that facilitates.
And yet evolutionary psychology will tell you that one of the prime motivations is to mate and to have a family, to have a home. And it's a key part of living, isn't it?
Yeah, no, exactly. And I'm not particularly succinct as to what type of family you have. Just have a family, try procreate, because we're gonna get to the problem with Japan, where Japan is an incredibly advanced nation, doing better than us in nearly every single metric. However, it's dying, and it's dying internally, not because of any external force. Everyone wants to blame external forces, but in Japan specifically, they are a case study for declining birth rate.
Yeah,
is catastrophic.
South Korea the same.
Yeah, and we're heading in that direction, and I think, while I don't want the state to meddle, I'm classical liberalist, a small state, stay out of my life, it should facilitate.
Yeah, I mean, what they can do is not have tax policies which actually work against that. And that's what we have in a lot of cases at the moment, is tax policies which do not encourage people to have children. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a big thing.
Yeah, no, of course.
So what other Reform policies do you feel strongly about?
So, 2 years at university, forcing universities and pushing for universities to offer 2 year courses. Mm. You know, that's a big thing I'm striving for. Getting rid of, or, you know, trying to discourage universities from giving out unconditionals. Mm. I have friends who say, oh, well, once I got an unconditional, I didn't really care anymore. It doesn't really matter. A lot of people don't bother trying. There's no incentive to strive for these high grades. And university admissions are going down, whether that be because they can't afford
and
it.
They've still got the staff that they've got to pay.
Yeah, they've still got the staff. And unfortunately, from what I've been hearing, is that the staff that they're choosing to potentially lay off could be cleaning staff and catering staff. Mm. So those members of staff that are most in need of a stable income, that probably rely on that income to live, rather than perhaps some of the professors who we know are getting paid thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds a year.
But there's a bigger problem here, isn't there, with the universities, and it's the way that the universities are now set up, whereby they are, as you say, effectively they're trying to attract students at all cost, and in many cases attract students from abroad at all cost, because they get more income from those. But they're effectively competing with each other as if we're businesses.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Now, I mean, I remember, it's a long time since I was at university, but I remember in those days it wasn't like that. I mean, at the moment we've got something like 50% of people that go to universities, of the population. When I went there, it was 5%. So it's a huge difference. And in those days, it really was a struggle. You had to really get good grades to be able to get in an offer from a university of a place.
Yeah, well, they've gone from places and institutions of growth and learning and shared thought to basically proto-corporations. Mm. They are trying to get as many people into the door, and really they want to get as many out to pump their stats. But unfortunately, where's the specialization? Universities used to specialize. They used to be, you know, you knew that if you wanted to do a certain degree, you wanted to do a certain course, you'd go to a certain university. And other than the red brick, other than your high Russell Group universities, it doesn't happen anymore.
And you're also absolutely right that the length of the courses is wrong, that it needs to come down. I mean, 3 years is far too long. There's nothing that you can teach somebody in 3 years that you can't teach them in 2 years.
Well, I don't know if you realize this, and I don't know if many of the audience have realized this, is your first year of university, as long as you pass, not a single grade you earn in that first year goes towards your final degree. Mm. So you are basically working for a year and you just need to do the bare minimum. I have so many friends, colleagues, I know people personally where the first year it is just to have a drink because all I need to do is pass.
But the point is that because of the funding model, the universities need to keep you there for 3 years because they need the 3 years income from you, and they need you to build up that extra debt on your student loan in order to which must be a worry.
Yes, no. I tend not to try and look at my student loan, if I'm honest. I know a lot of friends are the same way. Because it's not a traditional debt, I guess it's not as scary, but knowing that money is piling up because I'm going into teaching, so I'm like my fourth year at university, I've got to go do a PGDE, which is a new fangled qualification that they change them every year.
Is this to be allowed to teach?
Yeah, well, this is to be allowed to teach specifically at college.
Right.
So they've got different ones for college and primary and secondary. So, but weirdly, if you get the PGCE, which is a high school education, you can teach at college.
Right.
But if you get mine, you can't teach at high school. So they're offering.
And what do you think of what Bridget Phillipson's currently doing with regard to schools in terms of stopping academies from hiring who they want, etc., and forcing the curriculum down a much narrower path?
Well, unfortunately, I feel like the motives, I will give this, and even with many Labour policies, the motives might come from good places. I don't think many politicians wake up in the morning and think, I want to be evil, I want to have regressive policy. And the motive is to drag up the lowest achievers and to bring them to an even level. Unfortunately, what you do is you punish the high achievers, and I don't see the merit in that. I am all for social support. I'm all for helping those that are struggling, whether that be for grades or because of family problems that they can't attend. Of course, they are our people. Our elected officials should be fighting tooth and nail to help those struggling. But why are we punishing the top?
Mm, absolutely. I mean, what the problem is that people say equality of opportunity. And there's very few people who would say, I don't want equality of opportunity. We should have a meritocracy where people get on according to their abilities. So the problem is that the way it translates itself is not in equality of opportunity, but in equality of outcome. So in other words, you get to the point where if you haven't got equality of outcome, then you can't have had equality of opportunity. That's the argument.
No, it's exactly. Nonsense, but. Yeah, well, one of the main things that I look at is that how little we think of people. For example, all women shortlists. I would not disrespect women to think that if they were on a candidacy list with a man, that for some reason they couldn't achieve that just because they're simply a woman. Mm. I would not dream of disrespecting women like that. All sort of lips, positive discrimination, this idea that you must give somebody else a helping hand because for some reason they're not good enough. No, I have faith in every single person as an individual, that if they strive, they will achieve. And I think it's belittling to force these positive action policies onto them.
Absolutely. And it doesn't work in practice, because if you look at what's happened to the Labour Party, and it's got a perfect example of it, is that they've had these all-women shortlists now for quite a number of years. And what it has produced is a load of thick women MPs.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we look in which party is achieving women, and in a lot of examples, ethnic minorities in high positions, and that's the Conservatives. And whether I particularly care about meeting these quotas, you have a party like the Conservatives who do not have all these huge internal mechanics to get these people from ethnic backgrounds or from women up into high positions. And they do get into these high positions. The Conservatives, Margaret Thatcher, Liz Truss, whatever you feel about Liz Truss and Theresa May, they were women who achieved the highest office in the whole of the UK. They didn't have positive action to do that. They got there because they tried hard and they were rewarded for it. And clearly, as you've said, the policies are not working in the Labour Party because we're not getting the right politicians, the right people. So we need to meet somewhere in the middle. And I think that's what reform is. It's the middle. It's your working class people, but there's also a middle class and there's upper class, and everyone feels the same way. It's all about your patriotism, realizing that your country is going downhill. And it's not unpatriotic to say that. Mm. In my mind, it's patriotic to have the gall to point out and say, listen, something's going wrong and we need a reset. And how do you get that? You don't vote for the Conservatives and you certainly don't vote for Labour. Vote differently. And I understand that there's going to be the, you know, principled left-wing people that I'll have a lot of respect for, and they could not vote reform. And I'll hold my hands up and I will accept that. That is completely fine. What I can accept is them voting Labour. Mm. Vote Liberal Democrats. If you feel that strongly, vote the Greens. I'm not going to disparage you. That is your opinion.
Really?
Well, I wouldn't personally vote for them. And I certainly wouldn't advocate for their policies. But if you're a principled individual and that's how you feel, fair enough. But a vote for the uniparty, Tories or Labour, in my mind, at this point, it's a betrayal.
Coming back to Lancashire, which ward is it you're standing for?
So West Lancashire East. So unfortunately, I stand out because I'm one of three who is against a currently sitting Conservative.
Right.
So that's a little bit different. Actually, I'm against Rob Bailey, I believe his name is, who is the chairman of the West Lancashire Conservatives. So quite a
you should be able to find out plenty on him then.
Yeah, well, we've already had we've been speaking to some people and they've been telling me stories and unfortunately, you know, this isn't a general election.
Believe the stories and then regurgitate them.
Yes. I'm kind of thinking, do I want to play that game, the game of politics? Well, you know, if I find it out and it's true, then maybe. But I think the main point is stagnation. You know. He's been the councillor for over 10 years, I believe.
Yeah.
And has a difference been made? And he could argue that maybe that's because he doesn't have enough
power.
Conservative
You'll
support
see,
yeah, power. And of I course he
we're
was.
We're a minority.
You can't
do much.
But at the county council level of Lancashire, the Conservatives hold far more power.
Well, you see this all the time, though. We have it on the world whereby we have a majority Labour group who are, they haven't got the majority, but basically they've got 8 out of 10 people on every committee. So in practice, they have the power. Now, Wirral Borough Council is rapidly running out of money and has gone for 40 million to the government to try and get through to the end of the financial year. Now, in these circumstances, the leader of the Labour group on the council decided he was going to resign. So the leader of the Conservative group, a bit perplexed by this and thinking that he might actually have to take responsibility and power, supported the guy who wanted to resign from the Labour group in order to stop him resigning. So that was the level of opposition that they were providing.
Well, I've had this firsthand. I've talked to councillors, I've talked to MPs. I do work as a trainee teacher on the side, so I'm in these circles. I speak to these people. And a lot of them say it's a pretty cozy job in opposition, but they enjoy it. Especially at the local level, all I have to do is hold my hands up and say, I don't have the power.
Yeah, well, they get their 15K a year or whatever. Yeah. If they don't have to do very much, then that's fine.
Yeah, I'll make a few Facebook posts. I'll chip in and go, maybe go to a town hall meeting here and there. Ultimately, will you achieve anything? Well, no, we've had so many problems around the nation. You had the grooming gangs, Rotherham. They had councillors. Those councillors often knew about these issues. Were they vocal about it?
Well, some were involved in them, I think.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And you know, when I'm elected, hopefully, as a councillor, it's not only my job to fix the problems that I have in my power to fix, but to be a constant voice for those in my constituency. And it doesn't even matter. Did you vote for me? Well, I'm not going to not push, you know, issues just because you didn't vote for me. If you're a Labour supporter, you're a Conservative, they're our West Lancashire, which is the Independence Party, you know, I'll have respect for these people. They are the locals and they're the people I'm representing. If they have issues, what I want to be is a voice. That is all I intend to be, a voice and a vessel. And there's lots of theories regarding representation and, you know, did they elect me because I'm because they believe in me and they want my opinion, or am I simply there to voice the will of the people? And I'm more of the latter, I believe. I want to be that megaphone where if you have an issue in Parbold Village, which is in my council division, then come to me, talk to me. I will voice that. I will make sure that everybody else hears, because you might not have the outreach, but I might know at least somebody who might know somebody else, who might know somebody else to do opportunities like we are right now with the podcasts and social medias to get out there and to realize this is a problem. Might not be a party political problem. Does it really matter? No. It's just about voicing it for the people.
That's very powerful. And, you know, that's, I think anybody watching that, when they look at this podcast, when they see you speaking like that, and the people in your ward who could potentially vote for you see you speaking like that, they will know that they must vote for you. They must get you in, because you would be a breath of fresh air, I'm sure, in the moribund council that you've got at the minute. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much for coming in, and I wish you every success.
No, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Cheers.